super reinvigorated for
one of the most
surfing.
Intimidating activities.
I would go. I would want to go surfing. I've never been. I would love to do that.
I'll take you guys out if you want to go.
Great.
I feel like I would be very good at it. I tried boogie boarding once when I was
a
kid.
You have good balance.
It was bad. It's my low center of gravity. I think it's an inner ear thing.
It's your gigantic inner ears.
Yeah.
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and lactation consultant, Sean Roney.
I'm Edwin James, Quality Assurance.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
I'm sort of a master of distraction. When I was a kid, my mom received compliments left and right from my teachers on how I was always able to distract others in class. Try to think, what were the first 13 colonies?
Mm-hmm. So stupid.
Oh, that's every week we get together to talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, an episode recap, The Delivery, parts 1 and 2.
Mm. This week, we're deciding to jump into The Delivery. It's a pretty significant episode in that Jim and Pam become parents, and that dynamic obviously carries out through the rest of the show. But yeah. I feel like the change from Jim and Pam to parents, as opposed to their romantic relationship, this shift is where that really kind of happens full stop. You know, mm-hmm.
It's a big episode for a lot of reasons.
Exactly.
Honestly, three of the four major relationships on The Office are at a turning point in this episode, be it Aaron and Angela, Dwight and Angela, Aaron and Andy, and Jim and Pam.
Michael and Helene.
Michael and Helene, yeah. Right.
The Delivery, season 6, episode 17 and 18, double episode.
Love a double ep.
Directed by Seth Gordon and Harold Ramis, respectively. Written by Daniel Chun and Charlie Grandy, respectively. And aired on March 4th, 2020.
Respectively.
Oh, 2020. That's incorrect.
Shout out to the March 4th Marching Band.
Aired 2010. Jesus. You want me to take that again?
Let's keep going. March 2010. Mm-hmm. I graduated college 2 months later.
Yeah. We were watching these. We were watching these episodes
in
together.
The moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. We were having, this was still during the weekly viewing parties that mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. a part of.
It comes after the manager and the salesman and before St. Patrick's Day. Those are both very Saber oriented episodes. And there's almost no mention of Saber in this.
I was really struck in this, like I pitched the topic for this week, right? And I think I was struck in rewatching these episodes how sort of mundane and in the flow of everyday office life they felt. Mm-hmm. There is one quick allusion to Saber, which is when
selling printers.
Oh, selling printers. Yes, yeah, but I was thinking of when Pam wants distractions while she's trying to wait out her contractions, Michael says, you can't tell us what to do. You're not co-manager anymore.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, he alludes to that. And it's funny to see Michael kind of celebrate his power again. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's right. That is the one kind of nod to what just happened. Mm-hmm. The salesman and the manager. They're, of course, both co-managers, and Joe Bennett shows up and says, no, only one can mm-hmm. do.
There's no office work that happens in this episode. It's just
them
eating and having discussions.
The only other time, which I already shouted out, was the part when Jim is like, you're right, I won't worry about you, Pam, what matters. I'll get back to what really matters, selling printers.
Right.
But other than that, this is focused completely on the lives of Jim and Pam, pretty much.
It could have almost existed anywhere. Yeah. In the show.
This is kind of a weird little dead spot of episodes of, and when I say dead spot, I mean like with even St. Patrick's Day and a few episodes before this is the banker. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of episodes that are kind of just little kind of self-contained ones that don't really feed into the larger plot that much. But it sort of has to be this way because in this episode has so much to do with the progression of so many characters in the show. And not just Jim and Pam. I'm sure we'll get into this, but this has to do with a lot of other people.
You find that oftentimes when the show's plot dynamics are quieter, the character relationships can develop a little bit more. And vice versa. When big things are happening in the office park, sometimes the individual characters and their relationships don't get the same kind of development. Think about the Michael Scott Paper Company, which is kind of at a mirror point in season 5, where so much is happening with these characters. And granted, there are moments where Pam and Michael are kind of growing in their own ways in this new environment, but it's less a focus on their relationships, you know?
Yeah. I've heard Mindy Kaling talk about this too, as far as what you see with certain orders of what you might say are big budget episodes with smaller budget ones. She was talking about, she was tasked with writing The Injury, which comes right after Booze Cruise in season 2. And it was like, they spent so much budget and time and energy on Booze Cruise and so much important stuff happens. They're like, okay, so we have to follow that with an episode that's just very self-contained in the office. Not a lot can happen. And it's like, yeah, most of that episode is Michael sitting in the, like laid up in the office complaining about his burned foot.
Right.
You know?
Also, at this point in the show, the ensemble is pretty much baked, you know? A lot of the... Even Gabe is joined at this point, right?
Yep.
So there is an element of the full ensemble kind of working together in a way that you see in season 6 and the earlier seasons as well. But, like, this ensemble feels really complete at this point, and it doesn't really change again until, what, season 8? With, like, Nelly comes in and Michael leaves.
Michael Scott.
And Robert. Yeah, exactly. So I think the show seems to be having fun with all the characters together.
The cold open for this episode, Pam and Jim, I mean, Pam, of course, is pregnant, and Dwight catches them mentioning to their clients that they're about to have a baby and therefore getting more sales out of it. And Dwight and Pam tells Dwight, it's okay to talk about your life. People like it. So Dwight starts talking about how Moe's has this horrible goat fungus. And the doctor's never seen it. Sorry, go ahead.
The doctor's never seen a beard so quickly.
but of course, that doesn't
loved
work.
I would have loved just a quick shot of whatever that was.
Yeah, right.
Moe's already has a beard.
That's right. He's got the Lincoln beard, like just on the chin.
But of course, that doesn't work. So Dwight realizes that he needs a baby. He'll never outsell Jim and Pam without one. Also, he's been noticing a gaping hole in his life. Sometimes he wakes up cradling a gourd.
I did notice his shirt seemed to be an even more intense shade of mustard. It was almost pumpkin. So fitting that he alludes to gourds.
Yeah.
This of a butternut tone.
This sets up, I think the hardest time I laughed rewatching these two episodes, the moment when he is standing at the vending machine next to Angela, and it's very quiet for a second, and he's just, bear my child. And he just opens just with like, that phrase.
What?
Yeah, it's just incredible. The times, speaking of kind of repeat jokes and stuff, the anytime Dwight is having a secret conversation with Angela and they're so not looking at each other, at this point, it's like
fine,
season
but no
6
cookie.
They've dated.
Yeah, it's a real throwback.
Everyone knows
season
that they've
3
been,
era.
Yeah, everyone knows about them, but they still have this need to talk in secret. It's so funny.
If you agree, say nothing. If you disagree, say anything.
I love that.
Yeah.
Very well.
Are you still there?
Oh my gosh. The A storyline for this episode, of course, Pam is going to give birth, but is too afraid to go to the hospital. They say that they can wait until midnight and they'll save a bunch of money on their insurance, but
no, they'll get an extra night.
Get an extra night.
Yeah. And their stupid HMO.
Right. But of course, it's kind of revealed that Pam is afraid to go. And then later in the second part of the episode, she's having problems breastfeeding her new baby. Should I go over all of them? B storyline?
Did I stutter?
Do we want to, let's talk about Pam's little arc within these two episodes. Yeah. So Pam, is trying to last, until midnight. I love when Aaron says spooky, but why?
And Andy chimes in. What another great line of this episode. Andy chimes in, of course, saying agreeing that they should wait till the next day because of
Butt Mud Brooks.
You will have the same birthday
as Butt Mud Brooks,
my old roommate. And Pam goes, did you hear that? Butt Mud Brooks.
It's funny. We had a couple people ask us if via social or whatever that if Butt Mud Brooks was a member of Here Comes Treble. And it's funny how those things can get confused. Yeah. He certainly sounds like he could be a member of Butt Mud Brooks. of Here Comes Treble. No, he's not.
Well, he's, wow. And it's funny because he even sings it like a they would have perhaps his a cappella group sang it. Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, I mean, Pam's
wrestling with some intense things here. I mean, obviously, being this pregnant in front of the whole office, as she initially says when she first gets pregnant, she wanted to hide it for obvious reasons. And this sort of happens again in this one. People are very invasive of her pregnancy.
Which she welcomes.
Which yeah. But this is such a funny storyline because she's almost glad to have the rest of the office on her side wanting to help her out. And there's sort of everyone against Jim is an element for a good chunk of this, of the first of part one, at least.
I mean, this was kind of, this was a criticism of this episode when it first aired that it's almost unbelievable how much the office supports Pam in not going to the hospital. How do you feel about it?
I mean, just kind of tag off of Alex's point. This was such an intensely personal episode in a weird way.
Yeah, it is.
And to have all of that kind of play out in front of everyone was kind of strange, especially considering how much Jim and Pam like to fly under the radar.
Yes.
Right? If you think one season ahead of the PDA episode, when Gabe says you wouldn't even know they're dating,
right.
They do such a job of hiding it, right, for one reason or another. It was very strange to see it kind of play out in the open.
Well, you know, it makes me think of, like, how, you know, before this episode, after Niagara, Michael starts dating Pam's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes a very public issue.
Yeah.
And Pam's actually the one who spills the beans about that in front of everyone. So this is sort of the beginning of the pattern of, like, getting everyone involved in. I mean, Pam makes a quote later, I think, in the episode where she's like, you know that I feel like we should all be intensely involved in each other's lives, right? Do you remember when she does that?
Mm-hmm.
But I know that's not the exact quote, but
I'm reminded also of the line later. He's like, since when is this an office where we get involved in everyone else's business? When they're, I think they're talking about, I think it might be at the end of the season when he's dating Donna.
Yeah, I think so too.
But yeah, to your point, it is a little weird or it's a little strange to see the office so invested. I mean, the other piece of this is, of course, that Pam is pregnant, and that is something that they've all been dealing with in their, in their day-to-day work time. There's a lead scene from this moment where Pam says, it's not baby time. And Stanley says, it is baby Ruth time. And he gets up and goes, and he's like, pregnant coworkers. It's something like pregnant coworkers. Like, they think the world stops for that or something like that.
Yep.
It is baby Ruth time.
You think I don't need to know the fastest way to the hospital?
He's rubbing his feet.
Yeah.
Stanley's got some good moments in this one, too.
Oh, yeah.
His lone hand raise on who wants to live in a world where Stanley has two lovers. You don't have any. Stanley raises his hand.
We do get kind of a unique look into Pam's psyche just in that how much she has to she seems like she's the calm one, right? She's pushing off Jim. She's eating with Kevin. She's enduring these distractions.
There's that.
Just kind of get through the day.
There's that part where Jim's in the car and she's like, I am fine. Everything is fine. And you totally believe her in that moment.
And then later, as Jim is kind of pushing her and they realize that so much time has passed, her contractions are only 2 minutes apart, that Pam does sort of flip. And she says, like, I'm not going. OK,
yeah,
I don't know if I can do this. So,
yeah,
it is interesting how it flips.
And and in that moment, which I think it's one of the sweeter moments on The Office when Jim is talking to her and he takes that role of like, you're going to be fine. You know, we're going to have a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just looking directly at each other. And on either side of Jim is Michael also reaching his hand onto Pam's belly. And then Kevin also reaching his hand. And the fact that they're still just looking at each other, tuning Michael and Kevin, probably the worst two guys on either side of you in this moment. It's such a potent moment for Jim and Pam. And the way that the care in their eyes when they're looking for each other.
That's it.
While Michael's just like right behind Jim. So funny.
This is definitely one of my favorite scenes of the episode. And I think that's a perfect point that it's such an intimate, real moment in the show. Mm-hmm. And also just so
classic.
Ridiculously silly.
It's so classic of Michael wanting to like literally reaching into their business and talking about how they're going to have a baby.
Yeah. There are lines where Michael is just mirroring Jim. There's a line from Jim. Hey, are you kidding me? Michael, are you kidding? Jim, if anyone can do this, you can do this. Michael, you can do this. You can do this. Jim, Pam, I'm scared. I'm real scared. Michael, I'm scared too. Kevin, I'm petrified.
Oh my God. They're just echoing them.
They just keep hacking through the weeds, Jim and Pam. It's really cool.
There's also a great blooper of this scene where like Michael is telling Jim he's got to get it together. And they just keep...
You got to get it together right now. He holds him real close by the shoulders and gets right into his face.
They both just they can't handle it. It's so good.
I'm reminded of a line in the Michael Scott Paper Company arc when Pam is kind of... consoling or calming down Michael when Michael is kind of freaking out in his condo complex. You know, we need a client list and we need an office space. We need all these things. And Pam says something to the effect of, you know, in an extreme situation, when one person is freaking out, it kind of calms the other person down.
Yep.
And we get to see it flip here where Michael and Jim are calm when Pam sort of flips out.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that's true.
I do love the Kevin and Pam dynamic that is also established.
Yes, I love
that's something I wish they'd explore a little more, or at least the Kevin, the gourmand, I think. There's
such
some
a gourmand.
To that.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have ratatouille from Ratatouille. We have tandoori chicken from, what is it? Something to brothels.
You're killing Alex's trivia right now.
Just let that one go. We'll come back to that.
He cooked his way through the Twilight cookbook.
Don't look it up.
Edgar's cornflake chicken. Yeah. Edward's.
Swear to God.
Oh, he's going to make a prawn like that district, a cake like that District 9 prawn thing.
Why? You could have just let it go.
Oh, boy.
I don't have that many trivia questions. All right, well, here we go.
Someone is getting a little bit frazzled, okay? We know how much you don't like to use that word. That's one where they all, where Jim leaves and they all react.
He's a little frazzled.
Yeah. He's frazzled, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's you've talked about this before, Edwin, like the times where the whole office kind of
they pile on Jim.
You realize like, oh, no one buys Jim and Pam's crap sometimes. Like they're like, oh, who wants this happy young couple in the office? Well, we don't need them.
Yeah.
And that kind of rears its head a few times in this episode.
I think they relish a moment to kind of give Jim a hard time when they see Jim kind of in the back just making a lot of little, you know, little comment, right?
Yeah.
Comment.
Yeah. They kind of relish that opportunity to kind of get one back or to see him flip out in the way that maybe he causes Dwight to.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, Jim's taking something really seriously. Let's make fun of him for it, just like he does whenever I do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's going on throughout this whole episode.
Well, finally, they do get Pam in the car. There's a great sort of almost chase scene off to the hospital with Dwight impersonating a police officer.
The police who pulls him over, you can hear as he's saying it. He's like, pull over. It's like, you can't impersonate police. Don't make this hard, Dwight.
Yep.
And he's like
throwing weapons out of the window as he's
clearly he's done this many times.
Like, yes.
How many times the police know his car? They're just like, oh, God, it's Dwight.
As an extension of Dwight's escort service.
Yeah, right.
Right. He's made lots of friends.
Michael is texting while he's driving.
Mm-hmm. They make it to the hospital, and Pam has the baby. I think Jim says it's been 16 hours or something like that. 19 hours when they finally call him in. And then the issue for this episode with Jim and Pam kind of becomes...
Now we're into part two.
Yeah, yes. We're into part two where, you know, Pam's having difficulty breastfeeding.
Right.
This is a new sort of territory for the show in that Jim and Pam now have their baby, right? CeCe is born, and they're dealing with the struggles of being new parents. And I think one thing that I wish that they had kind of gotten into a little more is they're both so tired. They're supposed to be both really tired.
Yeah.
Yes.
And again, I'm quoting the deleted scenes, but there's a moment where Jim is holding the baby, and he's like, what a crazy ride it took to get here. And Pam says, fuck you. And they bleep it out to Jim.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And then it goes on like that, where Pam is truly just exhausted in that scene. And, and she says to Jim, you need to stop talking now.
Yeah. They do address it a little bit when Helene comes in with the coffee.
Yeah.
A great moment too, when Pam's like, oh my God, I haven't had caffeine in 9 months. And Jim gives the camera sure.
Right.
But that's a great nonverbal look at Pam's expense.
And Pam has to say
a funny little flip.
And Pam has to say it because her mom's right there.
Mm-hmm.
And Jim's like, no, she's been drinking a lot of coffee.
Definitely. Lately, especially as I watch episodes to prep for the show, I watch with subtitles on. And
always.
There's a moment where Jim is out there and he says, you know, I'm sent out for ice chips. I sort of passed out a little bit. And then the waitress, the nurse comes out and says, "Daddy, she's about ready to push."
Yeah.
And then you can see it's off screen, so like we're not in the delivery room, obviously, but the lines are.
Alex and I were just talking about this before you got here. Yeah.
He's like, "All right, time to push." She goes, "No, not yet." It was like, "Okay, don't push, pull." They're like, "Why don't you go get some more ice chips?"
Yeah, it's just like, get out of here, dude. We're done.
Yeah,
When Michael comes around the balloons and says, "Where's my niblet?"
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Family only. And he just barges through.
Yeah.
It's like when he parks the car at the end of the first part and he goes, "It's okay, Dunder Mifflin."
Yeah.
In the ambulance parking lot. As if the people of the hospital are going to be like, "All right, Dunder Mifflin, okay, yeah.
Sir, you can't park here." And then he just throws the keys. Mm-hmm. I just did. It's like, what?
That baby's going to have a lot of hair.
Yeah,
that felt like a cold open joke. That joke was the end of a cold open.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I noticed was Jim's diapering montage. I thought that was pretty funny. Mm-hmm. It's the doll, the football, and then Angela's cat. I thought that was pretty funny the way they filmed it with Angela in the doorway. Also, one thing I noticed is when Jim is diapering, I think it's the doll. He turns and he hits a timer, but he actually is starting the timer, not stopping the timer.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Funny little detail. Yeah.
Really quick on the Michael parking the car and throwing the keys. Mm-hmm. Just making notes while I watch this. I wrote this as like what I call a Michael movie moment, which Michael does throughout the series.
He's in a movie.
Well, he just does things he's seen in a movie.
Definitely.
And he does it. He's like, if you just do it, it'll work like it does in a movie. So obviously he throws the keys. I just did like these big dramatic moves. Also, the Titanic thing on the booze cruise, when he jumps on the train and money, when he throws the Frisbee on the campus. And my favorite one, when he goes to New York and he looks out the blinds and says, the city.
Yeah.
Just these little moments.
Stress relief,
I think there's probably another dozen you could list. So if you guys think of any.
Michael's entire speech in the business school episode.
Yeah.
Or in the lecture circuit episode. Anytime you give him like a runway for public speaking.
Yeah.
What about in Dwight's speech when he's doing the police academy guy?
That's hysterical.
There's so many. And it's not even when he's doing something from a movie, but just like a movie move. You know what I mean? Like,
You know what else? How does Jim get the car later? He threw the keys, and then they towed it away.
It's a great unanswerable question.
It's kind of like a throwaway, like, Jim being like, "Oh, it was really hard to find the car," but it's like,
and there were five tickets.
He always said it's five tickets.
Yeah, that's right. That's what it is.
You didn't get five tickets. That car was towed immediately.
Yeah.
Because the keys are gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Yeah, that's little bit of a plot hole.
To bring it back to Pam, you know how last week we were in the Phyllis episode, we were talking about accents and the cadence of the timbre? Yeah, she says, "We can go back and get us back at the house."
Yeah.
The way that she slips into that in what is a stressful moment, I think, was kind of interesting. I don't know if that was a choice, an acting choice, but it definitely, you know, if you're looking for it, you can see it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the other thing too, with Jim and Pam becoming parents, that moment that you're talking about with the caffeine, it's Jim and Pam maybe not being on the same page on everything. Mm-hmm. Especially when, I'm thinking of when, Pam says, she can socialize with the other babies.
Oh, that's
And Jim laughs and he's, "Oh yeah, definitely."
Right.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Also with, Jim keeps wanting her to do Jim's move where she's sort of pumps it out, or she like presses shoulders
You're
together,
pushing the milk out. Right? How would one do that? I love that it was such an offensive question that she receded to the third person.
Yeah.
How would one do that? And then obviously, of course, we get the other baby brought in.
Right.
The other couple.
I told this to Sean before we started, but great trivia team name: the Wrong Babies.
I like it.
Sorry, go ahead.
That actress is Melissa Rauch. She's Bernadette in The Big Bang Theory. She's a pretty major role in that show.
Yeah.
Dale and Kathy.
Yeah. There's a lot of funny moments between Jim and Pam. It's also kind of like, it's a little like, they're not on the same page so much in this two-part episode. Like, I mean, the whole first part, them not agreeing on what time to go to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, like all these other issues that we just talked about. But it makes me think they probably cut that scene that you're talking, like those couple of scenes where like there's just even more of a disconnect, or they're being a little like too cold to each other, that maybe those didn't really land as funny as they wanted them to, and just kind of added to like the amount that they're like the distance that seems to be happening between them sometimes.
Yeah, in a lot of the other Jim Pam episodes, or where there is a lot of Jim Pam sort of drama, I guess, they go far apart and then they end up dovetailing back together.
You gotta bring it back.
I'm thinking of the episode where they're just a little bit off. It's the baby shower episode in season 5, where Pam is at art school and they keep leaving each other voicemails, and then it turns out, you know, they were on the same page all along. Or in shoot, it's an episode in season two where Jim has to go to the back. He has to work in the annex.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh, yeah.
And same thing. At the end of the day, it turns out that Pam has been leaving you voicemails all day.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What's that word we came up with when you have a rock in your shoe? I have a rock in my... Or I have a thing in my shoe. You know. Little moments like that. So in this episode, we don't necessarily get that in the same way that we're used to.
Sure.
We get it at the end when she's breastfeeding successfully.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And yeah, we did it.
We get treated to these really sweet moments. I mean, the very last scene when they're waiting for the car and the baby finally latches on. Mm-hmm. Of course, we get when they're at the office and Michael and Kevin are reaching over. So, I mean, neither of us have been through the process of having a baby, but I feel like it's probably the roller coaster of like craziness of like you're trying to agree on everything, but one of you thinks it should go this way, and then but interspersed with these moments of union that are really, really beautiful.
Yeah, when they come back together in this episode, it's a family moment. Mm-hmm. They come back like as the three of them, which is very unique and very new. I'm also thinking of when they're struggling to swaddle Cece.
Oh, yeah,
like,
that's
hold her
right.
arm down.
Right.
She's too strong.
The B storyline of this episode, I would say, is Dwight and Angela form their sex contract to make a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Which, parenting contract.
I mean, hilarity ensues for multiple episodes after that because of this.
They're each other's notary.
They're each other's notary. And then, of course, in the second part, Dwight begins remodeling Jim and Pam's kitchen because he finds black mold in the cabinets.
Ridiculous side plot for Dwight, but they did give him a reason to be sidelined in this episode, which I think was kind of important because it clears space for the Andy, Kevin, Aaron, Michael thing that also goes on in this episode.
Right.
And also Dwight doesn't really have a reason to be at the hospital.
And Dwight demands a lot of gravity.
Yeah, whenever he's in the room.
It's a really good point. And it gives him a reason to sort of bump into Isabel and kind of rethink like the whole thing with Angela. Because at the end, and he kind of sighs and he's like, oh, boy, do I really want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And sort of seems the whole reason that he's at the house was to run into Isabel, who's bringing mac and cheese, the same thing that Kevin and Pam are eating.
Oh, do you think he was trying to run into Isabel by being at the house?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you were alluding to.
No. I just mean the writers. Like, it's a reason for why he would see Isabel throughout this whole thing.
I think it's really interesting that Isabel doesn't, and maybe this is territory we covered in our Dwight episode, but all the more reason why Dwight is always worthy of, you know, more focus, right? But I'm interested in the fact that Isabel only appears really in season six. I don't think she appears later on in the show.
Is that true?
She appears in Happy Hour.
Uh-huh.
Right? But does she appear again?
Niagara.
That's in season six. That's before the delivery.
I can't think of any other times.
Yeah. Anyway, because that becomes the sort of distraction for Dwight and Angela.
Mm-hmm.
He has to kind of consider each of them, right? And it just throws a wrench into what should be a clean reunion for Dwight and Angela.
You know, that's pretty funny because I don't actually ever think about it in that moment. Like when you're actually watching that scene between Dwight and Isabel, I never think about the fact that we just saw him form the sex contract with Angela.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There is a formality with the way they draw up the contract that I really love.
Okay.
That is very true to them, right?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. When Dwight is sitting at like a typewriter.
Yes.
In their old spot, hammering out the like word by word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they have to argue, you know, about little things like that, right?
Yeah.
A lot of analog things happening, like the stamps.
And, yeah, exactly. Yeah. The naming. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a moment too when they ask for two forms of ID and like Angela hands over the ID and right as Dwight holds it up, she stops what she's doing and gives a little like straight on look to Dwight so she can verify the picture on the ID.
Oh, yeah.
Just really funny little physical comedy bit.
There's also a line from Dwight where he says, you know, he's sitting at Jim and Pam's house and Angela calls and they're talking about the contract and he says, is there anything left to do? And he says, just the dot the I's, the G's, and the umlauts. And then he says, so why don't you come over here at precisely mid-late afternoon?
Yep. Shout out to Rolf, who's at the house.
Oh, yeah.
Helping out Dwight. And we couldn't figure out the third person. It was
Alex
a woman.
Alex and I were trying to figure it out. It's a tall person with, like, blonde hair and a ponytail. But I loved Alex's idea that it's Meredith's son.
Jake?
A little too early for that.
But
I was like, who could that be?
Yeah.
Because you don't really see the face ever. But We do know Rolf is there.
Also, pretty ineffective sledgehamming by Dwight when you rewatch that scene.
Oh, and Rolf, too. Yeah. He's tapping on... He's going like...
Right.
Yeah. Rolf is like hammering down on to like drawer. An open drawer or
it's
something
very weird.
Like that. It doesn't make any sense.
It's very weird.
There's but a lot of hopping back around.
Like kind of an amazing gift to give Jim and Pam, but also the worst time to give that gift.
It's not finished when they get back.
I know.
So, just a couple of days, I'll be out of your hair.
Yeah, that's
like, what
right.
do you guys need? Sleep and quiet for the baby. And it's like... He's going to have a Sawzall, like, ripping through cabinets.
It's funny the way they play with the dynamic of Dwight being in Jim and Pam's house. You feel like they would have done a little more with it, right?
Yeah.
Well, they set it up.
Sleeps naked in their bed.
When Dwight gets pulled over and then gets the call about, hey, can you go get the iPod from our house?
Don't
and
Pam touch says, anything
goes,
else.
And Pam goes to tell him where it is, and he goes, I don't need a key. And you that thinks you're going to set up a scene where Dwight is like, unlocking or he has a lock pick or he's figuring a way in and he just smashes through the front window on their
reverse,
house.
A reverse elbow. Yeah.
Like, yes. It's not even nuanced at all. I was like, what the hell? Like, I thought Dwight would have some crazy
so way. Much damage.
Or Dwight has a skeleton key, like an old antique skeleton key that works for some reason. Mm-hmm. But no, he just straight up breaks and enters.
The sleeping bottomless in their bed was pretty funny.
Yes, it was.
I also made a note to ask Jim where he got his marvelous sheets. I just feel like there could have been something Dwight could have done to prank Jim a little bit. They might have done. I also think they could have had Dwight sneak into the house a little more subtly than breaking an entire front window.
He commits several years in jail worth of crime by impersonating a police officer and then also
breaking into a home.
Like
that's very true.
Dwight should be locked
destruction
away
of property
for a while after this one. Yeah, he breaks in and destroys their kitchen.
He would put the device together to find himself in jail.
he makes several efforts to help Jim and Pam in this, and yet does nothing but stall their trip to the hospital and then destroy their home.
The part where he's like, oh, Michael, that's where I saw this deer.
Right.
Like,
he
over
stops
by the
as they're leaving the parking lot.
That's kind of a weird joke. I don't know. It's just like, it's kind of funny, but it's so blatantly a out of character thing for Dwight in that moment. Dwight would be like,
even Michael is like, oh.
Yeah. In that moment, Dwight, I feel like Dwight's character would not do that. He would be like, siren on right away. Let's go.
Yeah.
A similar in-character moment for Dwight is when Michael says, Dwight, you need to go back to the and get Pam's iPod. We need it yesterday. Well, why didn't you tell me yesterday? I kept IMing you how bored I was.
That's so good.
I love to imagine Michael and Dwight's IM conversations.
Yeah, right?
That's right.
I know. Anything else on Dwight and Angela in this one? I know this is sort of them reconnecting and kind of the start of the new phase of their relationship that ends, of course, you know, with them getting married. But is this the first time that Dwight, like, he just wants to have a child, right? Mainly for the purpose of just wanting sales.
Yes.
And he has the huge hole in his
heart. He tells
heart.
Angela that he wants to have a child for business purposes.
For business purposes. but it's like, he still seems to be avoiding Angela for quite a while after this one. Because at some point he's tries to get the contract null and void, you know, they start doing the punch card thing and they sort of relitigate this whole contract that comes up later. Do you think this is in character for Dwight to do this?
To do the love contract?
Yeah.
I think so. I think he's clearly conflicted when he meets Isabel again, and it kind of throws a wrench in what he's kind of been planning or what he's been kind of conceiving, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. And I think later on, right, we think about when Angela meets the senator in the, I think it's Wolf.com, that Pay Place episode, or no?
Yeah, yeah.
Wherever they have Hay Place.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a place for hay. Right. That's when she meets the senator, and shortly after that, the contract
Hello!
Is voided.
Welcome to Hay Place, a place for hay.
I feel like in that moment, because like, I guess they can't really introduce Isabel as a major character at this point, but it's so clear that like, Dwight has considered the biological implications of a child. And when he's like talking to Isabel initially, the blood type, you know, her size, like the things that Dwight likes about the opposite sex. It just seems like he wouldn't do that with Angela.
Yeah.
If he just wanted a kid.
Well,
but it's his way back to maybe reconnect with Angela. And then he's like not into it at the end of the episode. So just struck me as a little odd.
It seems like his only option at the time.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe he should have waited.
C storyline?
Michael tries to matchmake and set up Aaron and Kevin together.
Mm-hmm. along that sort of...
There is a line in the deleted scene where Dwight talks about his reasoning.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. We can listen to it if you want.
Oh, what does it say?
I'd have to play it for you.
just play it, because I'll drop it in.
Unlike all those...
There's also a line from Angela explaining her reason.
I have chosen Angela Martin's uterus for my offspring. She is of age and is capable of achieving the proper viscosity levels needed to induce insemination. Also, we work together, so there's the whole convenience factor.
Like most couples.
That's all it says.
Oh, amazing. God. Gross. All right, well, okay. Fair enough.
Because there's similarly...
Asked and answered.
There's a line from Angela where she talks about why she thinks it's okay for her to have a child out of wedlock.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because, yeah, exactly. It goes the other way as well. Sure. It kind of seems to fly in the face of Angela's morality. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say, too, back to the C storyline, Sean, that it is Michael matchmaking, but it's also sort of Andy... trying to ask Aaron out.
Leads
is the real storyline, because he's hiding behind the plants all episode, watching Aaron get matched with Kevin.
That's right.
Several times he gets caught behind plants. And,
yeah, there's kind of a lead up where Andy, everyone, it's like, raise your hand if you're single. And Andy says, torn scrotum, still on the mend. Right. And when Michael's going to start matchmaking. And that whole dynamic with Aaron and Kevin and Michael is kind of what gives Andy kind of the impetus to ask her out, or like it finally is the thing that allows him to ask her out, mm-hmm. with the whole facts thing. So yes, is the three of them, or the Andy, well, Aaron, Kevin, and Michael kind of playing out this fake matchmaker scenario, and Andy watching from behind foliage.
Yeah.
That kind of happens in the background of all this.
I'm just trying to think, when do Aaron and Andy first, like, when is the spark, or when do we first know that they're into each other?
Well, he's first into her when she shows up, because
that's true.
Dwight and him compete for her
trying to avoid another whole Angela situation.
Right. But there's also murder.
There are a few
moments, kind of where he really talks about wanting to ask her out.
Or in Secretary's Day, when, you know, Andy and Aaron are...
They're dating.
Andy is doing all this for Aaron.
But that's after this.
They're
dating
after this,
Secretary's Day?
Secretary's Day is after.
This is a few episodes later.
He gets her for Christmas.
Secret Santa. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
But yeah.
The only reason I asked is because there's a moment in this one when during the... contraction distraction meeting, and Andy does the evolution of dance,
right,
and it shows a shot of Aaron, and she's just kind of checking Andy out when he starts to kind of thrust his hips, and I was like oh, is this the first time that Aaron looks at Andy that way? And it kind of seems like it is, but
she does think that he's actually asking her out in murder, and
she wanted to
go on a date, but they kind of miscommunicate.
And the Niagara episode, she offers her shawl because in case the wood is too tough on Andy's damaged penis.
Torn scrotum, still on the mend.
I do love the way that Michael comes in with this sort of bluster where he explains Jim and Pam's sort of romantic story. Mm-hmm. Like, there she sat. Her name was Pam. She was engaged to an animal. And there he sat. His name was Jim. He was a tall, gawky salesman. And then he calls their odds of getting together insurmountable, which is one of the all-time great Michael words.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Incalculable.
And then Kevin's getting a lot of work in these two episodes, too. I mean,
he does,
is he matched with Aaron and everything that happens with that, but of course, all the eating with Pam.
Yes. Ultra Feast,
which leads to this exchange, which this is my cut for the drop at the top of the show.
You want to eat cat food with Kevin and not go to the hospital?
That's Fancy Feast. Ultra Feast is something they made up so they can pig out together in the name of ceremony.
What is October Feast?
Oh, that's great. So he can eat cat food?
That's such a great example of Oscar's utility.
He only has like a couple lines of the whole show, the whole thing. He has that, and then he has the other one where he says, the hospital will have dictionaries, bring a thesaurus.
Right.
At some point,
Oscar,
we'll do
getting a little prank in.
At some point, we'll do an Oscar episode, but that's so an encapsulation of Oscar's role in this show.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me a lot. When I was watching this, I was thinking about how Jim and Pam are at the hospital, and it's just Michael and the rest of the staff, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when Jim and Pam are on their honeymoon, Oscar is talking about how the Coalition for Reason is very thin.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Toby has checked out since June. You know.
Yeah, right.
So similarly, in this episode, it's the same sort of thing where there's no one to check Michael's impulses.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way that he sets Aaron up with Kevin is so funny.
So funny.
Michael asks Aaron to come into his office. And he says, "How would you feel if I told you I was going to change your life?" And she says, "Oh, boy." Yeah. And the look of pure excitement on her face.
Yeah.
And then it's just Kevin mumbling from behind the doorway.
Yeah.
Ta-da. Oh, say nothing. You are going to love me. Right?
Yeah.
And then he makes up that thing about Kevin having an elephant's heart.
That's right.
Yeah. He was 17.
Yeah. And he's like, "I made that up." And he's like, his heart is enlarged, though, probably.
And it won't kill Aaron to have lunch with him in the break room.
Bad. Yeah. Bad look for Michael, though, at the end. I mean, the whole thing with
he's really
Kevin
brutal.
And yeah. Aaron. He's so mean to both of them. And so in one moment of just like,
"Oh, my God,
Kevin, how could you think?
Yeah, this is excruciating. Kevin, did you really think you could have dated Aaron?" Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He goes on in that whole thing. And then he turns to Aaron. He goes, "Nice going."
Oh, my God.
And Kevin's like, "I've done better than Aaron. Like, Lynn was way hotter." And it's just a horrible conversation.
So bad.
And you dated Holly and Jan, and they were so much hotter than you. As hot. And that's debatable.
Yeah.
It's a great Michael episode overall.
There's so many great moments.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I love contraptions. She's contrapting.
Mm-hmm. And there's then, a deleted scene moment where he does that and he says, "Shall I scrub up?" They're all like, nope.
I also love when they're finally deciding to go to the hospital, he's like, "I'll bring the car around. I filled it up. Diesel, wanted to save some money.
I am a licensed Class C driver in the state of Pennsylvania."
Yeah, that's right.
I also love his balloon assortment when he first goes to the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a big assortment of balloons.
Yeah.
It's like a lot. They're barely getting through the doorway. Yeah.
He lights the cigar in the hospital, says you can't smoke anywhere these days.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then seeing Helene in the hospital room, she, like, as Helene's they have a couple awkward moments, but as Helene's leaving, she's like, says, "I love you" to Pam. And then Michael just goes, "Love you too, as a friend."
He goes in for the hug and he says, "I worry about you."
Yeah, how have you been? Yeah. I worry about you.
Right?
So,
he's just so terrible
bad.
In this one. But, you know, he's so happy this entire episode.
Yeah.
And he's so overjoyed. Mm-hmm. And so he can't really, like, his mood has never changed.
Well, the baby was conceived here, Jim.
That's right.
Yeah.
No, nope. Burning Man, porta potty.
Yeah. Ugh. Ugh, TMI. How was it? Tell me later.
I don't want to hear it. Tell me later.
And then after he says, he talks about being Cupid and he's going to shoot you with the love gun. Mm-hmm. And then the way he walks around, pow, pow. And then he goes over to Phyllis and, like, does the thing where he moves his hands around.
Yeah.
Like,
I thought that was a callback to the original Office, BBC Office, when Gareth is talking about getting killed by a Japanese sniper. Mm-hmm. And he's like, "You never see it coming." I'm like, poof, poof, and he does the bullet through the head exploding. And it's kind of exactly what Michael does to Phyllis.
Definitely. What does this episode do overall? I mean, I think certainly it raises the stakes for Jim and Pam's relationship. Now they are family.
It's a big...
And we watch them struggle a lot.
It's a big chapter page turn in the show. Like I said at the top of the show, not just for Jim and Pam, I think, but for Aaron and Andy, for Dwight and Angela, for a lot of those, the kind of romances that at least through the last three seasons of the show, a lot is pulled out of those three relationships, especially Dwight and Angela and Aaron and Andy. So it sort of tees up all of that. And like you said, Edwin, it's when Jim and Pam become a family. And that dynamic is so present in the show for the rest of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was struck by how much happens in terms of Dwight and Angela and Aaron and Andy in this episode, kind of in the background when we're thinking about Jim and Pam and their family. It is certainly like a different dynamic for Jim and Pam, and them dealing with their baby services in different ways throughout the rest of the show. I feel like it happens a little bit more when Pam is pregnant again in season 8, and they spend a little bit more time with her being pregnant in the office. I feel like in some of the episodes in season 6, you forget that Pam is pregnant.
Definitely.
Yeah, like, think about when he's dating Helene. Like, they don't really talk about it, you know?
That's true.
Which happens after the wedding. We know that Pam is pregnant all of this season because of what happens in the company picnic episode.
That's right.
At the end
That's
of
right.
season 5. So, they definitely make it something that we kind of have to remember with Jim and Pam for the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Especially later on when Jim goes to Philly and all that stuff happens and Pam has the kids, right?
Mm-hmm. And like you said, the saber thing happens right before this. And that whole thing goes through and it's, again, it's not really
We're not focused
noticing
on...
that Pam is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just delivered a baby. He didn't give me a guarantee.
Did you have favorite moments in this episode? Least favorite moments? Least favorite people in this episode?
Let's hand out the Dundies for this episode. So we'll go around. We got a few things here that we'll do for the episode. Let's see. Where did my notes go? Just text. Oh, there it is. Best scene of this episode. Mm-hmm. For me, I said when Jim gets frazzled and everyone gangs up on him. I just love it. It's so funny. The way Jim, that's just like such a juvenile comment from Kevin of like something about sticking up the butt. I don't remember.
Oh, it's
stick spicy foods.
Yeah,
stick,
her yeah, and nope, shove nope, spicy foods nope. And the way Jim is just like he's so and Jim's in Jim's right.
I'm not crazy. She's crazy.
Yeah, Jim's
I'm
right
not crazy.
Here.
She's crazy. Yeah.
By the way, I hate that you're all helping her with this.
Yeah. You so rarely see that kind of lashing out, and then everyone's been like, "Geez, that guy's frazzled."
Yeah,
this is great.
Yeah,
favorite scene. Yeah,
you know, Jim does that that by the way thing another time in Michael's last Dundies when he accepts the award for like best dad or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's like, "Cece, if you're watching this is way past your bedtime. By the way, how this get televised?" There's something like that about that. By the way, hate that you're all helping her with this. Yeah. There's something about Jim when he's emotional.
Yeah,
that same scene. Yeah. He also goes away from Mike and he goes, I don't know. Maybe it's just about following your own compass.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
I would probably pick that scene we were talking about where they're consoling Pam right before they take her off to the hospital.
That was the next one. Yep.
And it's just so
all the hands on her.
It's so sweet belly. And stupid at the same time. It's very funny.
Yeah. I forgot about two from this episode for me when Jim comes out and all the people from the office are there.
Mm-hmm.
And, she is, and then Michael starts jumping in with his own. He's guessing the weight. 11 pounds. Yeah. Michael's 7 pounds.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to Phyllis eating the cake.
Oh, yeah.
I'd forgotten about Phyllis and the ice cream cake.
Oh, yeah.
What are you doing?
Are
God,
you
go,
insane?
Go, go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the move is to bring the ice cream cake into the, into the hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Oh, and then Michael with the love gun. That's the other one that I really, really love.
Yeah.
It's good.
Who came off the worst in this episode or least favorite moments?
Michael to Kevin. That was my least favorite.
Being
mean to Kevin.
The worst is Michael. Managing to really hurt two people's feelings in one go by Aaron and Kevin. Terrible stuff. Also, Dwight, not great. He, again, like I said, breaks two laws. Also destroys Jim and Pam's kitchen.
It was funny, though.
It was funny, but in the real world, man, he's in trouble.
Yeah, he caused some damage. I'm going to give, least favorite or worst... person or entity to the hospital that Jim and Pam give birth at. Everyone who works there sucks. And
you only see one.
You got the nurse who's kind of rude to them from the very beginning. She's like, oh, good. You read the baby.
You know
book.
Everything.
Yeah, you know everything. Yeah. These.
You got the guy at the wheelchair at the end who's like trying to,
trying to kind of kick her out of the wheelchair.
Do you need help up? Or?
Yeah. And they're trying to kick them out of the room early. Also, Clark, the male lactation consultant, he's a bit of a creep. Like,
is he?
What? He turns to the camera and goes, "Got milk?" I don't know.
Does that come
across as good?
It's fine.
I don't think it's that creepy.
Didn't bother me so
it's
much.
Only creepy.
You know that is played by Jenna Fisher's real husband.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, Lee Clark.
That's,
yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah,
that's very funny. I kind of thought that you weren't really. I got the impression that you're not really supposed to like him.
I wonder if it's just played for a laugh. Jim is so jealous, and we don't really get to see Jim be actively jealous in the moment anymore.
Very much of the same. Just like nope. don't like that.
Who's the guy? Don't let Michael smoke the cigar in the hospital.
Yeah, that's true. Sir, you can't smoke that in here. Put that out. You can't smoke it. Yeah. Who's the person who tells Michael he can't park there? Is it the same guy with the wheelchair?
I don't think it is.
I'm not sure.
No, that's not the same guy.
I don't know.
An EMT would not be.
That's true.
In a nurse with a wheelchair in there, that's true. Who knows?
Who is the best character of this episode? We did least favorite or who comes off the worst? Who comes off the best?
I think Jim.
Jim, yeah.
That's like, I could agree. I think he's, I mean, obviously, I think maybe the real answer is Pam because she delivers a baby.
I was going to say Pam, yeah.
But it's, I think outside of that, next is Jim, just because he does, he really truly has Pam's best interests at heart this entire time. And he's really trying to keep her away from all the crap in the office. And he's like, we said 5 to 7 minutes, and Jim's compromising throughout this entire episode of being like, fine, I'll wait. Yeah. Freaks out at Michael when he gets down to 2.
Yeah.
And then talks Pam off the ledge a little bit when she's freaking out and doesn't want to go to the hospital, and manages to be like, you're going to be a great mom. You're going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
His big mess up, of course, grabbing the wrong baby, but he quickly fixes that issue. And I think he's, considering the circumstance he's in, again, this is all outside of Pam, who probably is the best of this episode. Mm-hmm. I'll give it to Jim.
Mm-hmm. I was going to give a pat on the back to Kevin for Ultra Feast, but I might have to take it away for the shove spicy foods up her butt comment.
Yeah.
But and then in part two, Erin for like,
she's very nice to Kevin.
She's very nice to Kevin throughout that whole thing. And then I'm happy for her and Andy.
And she still sends a fax despite being
distraught. That's another part that we didn't mention that I do really like. I love when Andy gives her the fax and he's like, you need to fax this right now or you're fired. And she's like, you can't do that.
You can't talk to me that way. I've had a long day.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, God, no.
He's like, just read the fax. She's like, you read the fax.
This is a period of time where Erin gets a lot of these really weird emotional outbursts.
Yeah.
Like in Secretary's Day when in the foster home that my hair was my room.
Yeah, yeah.
She hits Andy with the cake. Like, there are a lot of times when we see like a lot of weirdness from Erin in very emotional moments. And this was a pretty funny one.
She gets so many good one-liners. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She does so well with them, and the part of like, let me just send this fax. So funny. Yeah.
The sincere, the way she says, "Oh boy,"
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of when Dwight is trying to pick Daryl or Kelly for the minority training program, and would you be excited if I told you there was this kind of program? And Erin says, "I sure would." Dwight says, "I'm not talking to you, Paleface."
She's like, "I know. I'm happy for them."
I think the character that comes off the best in this episode is Pam. And not just because obviously she delivers a baby and that's like a incredible accomplishment, but and they, you know, start their family. But I think something we've talked about is how Pam's journey in the show or her overall character arc is often dotted with struggle or disappointment or failure and heartbreak in a lot of ways, right? We think about how much she struggles to do certain in this era of the show, right? She struggles with art school, right? Mm-hmm. She struggles with being a salesman, right? And going into this moment, she is afraid that she's not going to be able to do it, right? She's worried about becoming a mom, which is a very natural fear. And at the end of the episode, when they're struggling even after the child is born, right? Mm-hmm. For her to for breastfeeding, right? But at the end of the episode, when they have that moment together, while they're waiting for Jim to pull up the car, that feels like a win for Pam. And even though Pam's overall journey is very happy overall, when you look at it like zoomed out, that moment felt like a really big win.
It does, and that moment is so, there's just a second where she's so lonely when the guy kicks her out of the wheelchair and Jim is gone to get the car and she's all by herself.
Yeah.
And she's very vulnerable in that moment. And she just turns and she starts to actually breastfeed the baby.
Perseveres.
And latches on, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
Good way to end.
Any closing thoughts on this episode?
Well, we had the question in here, what's the most relatable part of the episode?
Oh.
Just wanted to share real quick because I did answer that. When Andy asks Erin out via the fax, and it doesn't quite work the way he hopes, I tried this in high school, and I asked a girl to a dance by having her Spanish teacher put it as a question in her test and give her that specific test.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
She was so involved in taking the test that she like went up and asked the teacher, being like, what is this question? Like, does this mean what I think? Like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
And it basically just had, it ended up being basically the teacher asking her out for me.
Like, yeah, right.
Did not work the way I wanted it to work.
SOS, lo que dice él. That's what he says? Yo soy Ken Cutton.
That was like I have a clever way to do this. Yeah. And it didn't quite work.
Just that's good.
Just like this.
That's a good story. Well, thanks. Conference room, five minutes. Oh,
I've got one other thing that I want to talk about really quickly. I love Andy behind the plants. Such a funny thing. So why was I hiding behind that plant? You know, and he talks about in college and being in that class. This guy's going to fail this class, right? And then he hits his head on the desk. Michael just says, yes, Andy.
Yes, right? Andy. Yeah.
And then in the deleted scenes, one thing that it's worth checking out. This is on YouTube, these deleted scenes. There's a storyline that they completely cut, which is Creed, who's noticeably absent in this episode. And
Except for raising his hand. Who's single?
Right, yeah. Well, he says, Pam is about to give birth to a child. And you know what that means. He's like, when new life begins, something has to leave. And he's like, it's about time for me to get my affairs in order. So there's this whole thing where he gives Angela, he goes up to Angela, he says, I wanted you to have this. She says, this is mine. He says, I wanted you to have it. She says, I could have you arrested. And he says, you can't arrest a ghost. And then later, when Pam comes in with the baby, He has a talking head where he's like, Pam gave birth to her baby, and I'm still here. He's like, well, if death can't stop me from dating, neither can my mom.
Oh, gosh.
What a creep.
I love it.
All right, let's go.
All right, let's
conference
do
this.
Room. Right now, conference room. Topic, potpourri, let's go.
All right, I have conference room this week, or at least to kick us off. Mm-hmm. We're going to start with an email from Stacy. She writes, hey guys, I know that Andy Bernard reveals later on that he was originally named Walter Jr. until he was six. At that mm-hmm. time, the name was given to his younger brother because it was a better fit.
We learned that in yeah. this episode.
Right.
Very yeah. fitting.
Yep. Yeah.
The name Andy has always been a curiosity for me because of its association with Cornell. You ever heard of it? a school Andy makes reference to ad nauseum.
Yeah.
Cornell's co-founder and university president for almost 20 years was Andrew Dixon White. And it was tradition for any enrolled student that bearing the surname White to be given the nickname Andy in his honor.
Huh.
So Andrew Dixon White. Case in point, the author of Charlotte's Web, Elwin Brooks White, was, from his days at Cornell until his death, known by his family and friends as Andy.
Whoa.
Do you think that the naming of this character was just a crazy coincidence, or is it possible that the writers of The Office were offering a little nod to a unique college tradition, as well as giving a little depth and backstory to the name of this character? Just wondering. Love the podcast. Keep the good work.
Do
thank
we
you,
know,
Stacey.
Thank yeah, you, thank Stacey. You. That's really interesting. Huh. Do we know if there's any notable Ivy Leaguers on the writing staff? I don't know.
Who knows?
Greg Daniels.
I wonder. I don't. Who knows? I have no idea if it was.
That is very interesting.
I mean, Greg Daniels went to Harvard, didn't he?
But we do know that.
Yeah.
We do know that his parents donated money to Cornell, and they have a wing of the school mm-hmm. in their name. So it would be very
daily
likely,
op-ed column. Bernard's uh-huh. regards.
It would be very likely that his parents would know about this tradition, mm-hmm. and when they needed to suddenly rename their firstborn son,
yeah.
they would choose Andy. That totally makes sense to me.
Yeah,
but that's a nice little Easter egg.
That is a really nice Easter egg, and even if the writers didn't know that, that's still really
fun
interesting
to believe that
fact.
They did.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's awesome. Thanks,
yeah.
Stacey.
Yeah, it feels like a very East Coast thing, and Andy feels like a very East Coast guy, especially when he
definitely.
Comes in.
Feels like, I would yeah, say, yeah. absolutely.
And especially when in the Stanford sort of days, when he kind of joins the cast. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it would not surprise me if this was intentional, but if not, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Toby wondering yeah. if sending Ryan to the annex was punishment for him.
Right.
But if it was, genius.
Genius.
Wow. Genius. awesome.
Let's check a we got a quick voicemail here.
Sweet.
Responding to last week's show about Phyllis.
Hey guys, it's Josiah, originally from San Antonio, Texas, but right now I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I just finished listening to the Phyllis episode, and I wanted to talk about the trivia question where Kevin talked about playing that music to get people out of exile.
Oh yeah.
So I'm a retired Marine. And Operation Just Cause, which was ran by President George Bush Sr., actually had General Manuel Noriega, the recipient of those rock music, including Guns N' Roses, Van Halen, all kinds of stuff like that, to get him to come out of stuff. It's Operation Just Cause, because that was the big thing to get Noriega to withdraw from where he was holed up in Panama. So, thanks for all you do. I enjoyed the podcast. Have a great day.
Oh, that's so great.
That's really cool. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Thank
you so much.
This is another great part about the show is you just learn these little tidbits.
Right.
And I don't know. I looked a little more into this.
Yeah.
So this was, you know, Noriega was holed up at the Vatican Embassy in Panama.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and then looked further into this. So I think there was a specific mission under Operation Just Cause called Operation Just Cause. Within that was called Operation Nifty Package, which is a very Dwight name to me. I don't know why it's
Nifty
very...
Gifties. They are Nifty. They're Nifty Gifties.
But that was specifically the operation to capture Manuel Noriega.
There's another joke here where that, you know, they play Guns N' Roses and Van Halen because Noriega hates that music. Mm-hmm.
But Noriega famously loved like opera and classical music, apparently.
But and of course we just looked this up. But Kevin recounts it as do that thing where you play really good music to get them to come out. So that
Kevin would probably love Guns N' Roses.
That's a deep joke there. Yeah. Deep joke.
I think about when he plays what does he play? Crazy Train, right?
Mm-hmm.
When he's kicking off the seminar.
Yeah. But this kind of relates to the other question, because it's like, if the writing staff is capable of these very deep, nuanced jokes, like, why wouldn't they name Andy?
I think so.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah. But yeah, thank you so much for your voicemail. That's really nice. Thanks, it's great to get that context. And yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
Hoo-ah.
It's time for some trivia.
Let's just do our thing, collect our hardware, and get the hell home.
Okay, I got trivia this week, which this is sort of the frame-by-frame super trivia, which is when we're doing trivia about an episode we all just watch.
Okay,
So a few of these already got answered, but I'll just go through them anyway, and you can answer them again. It's a couple easy ones here to warm you up. Dwight is hereafter known as what in their parenting contract?
Morpheus.
Yes, oh, yeah. Thank you. The names for the baby are limited to
Jedediah.
That's what Angela wants, but there's actually three names that Dwight gives.
Ebenezer.
Yes.
Worf.
Yes.
And Jedediah. No, that's Angela again. Honus.
Honus.
Oh, my gosh. Good. I wouldn't have gotten any of those.
Very good. Which is great old names. Mm-hmm. Quick fact of Honus, most people associate it with
Honus Wagner.
Honus Wagner, the old baseball star.
Flying Dutchman.
The Flying Dutchman. But it's Honus is actually how you pronounce that name. Just a heads up.
All right.
Honus. I remember that from a young adult novel I read as a boy. According to Dwight, how do you make sure it's a boy?
It is a process of keeping the womb extremely warm for 2 days after sex. extremely cold for 5 months after.
Yes, very good. Very good. Kevin makes a Hollywood-themed ultra feast.
Oh, yeah.
What are the three dishes?
Ratatouille from Ratatouille.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Tandoori chicken from bedrooms to boardrooms to brothels or something like that.
Born into brothels.
Oh my
Boardrooms to brothels. Yeah.
That's a documentary.
That'd be a very different movie. Yeah.
That is a documentary. To go from Ratatouille to Born into Brothels is like, I mean, it's a documentary about, you know, women in a third world country.
Yeah, but Kevin would just see, oh, brothels, and he would probably hit play.
Well, I'm pretty sure it must be India.
Les Jolies Choses.
Yeah, like Kevin's all over the film.
And then the cake, he was going to make a cake shaped like that prawn thing from District 9. And then Edward's cornflake chicken.
Yeah, that's right.
We never, he says, like, I wanted to make the cake shaped like a prawn from District 9. Mm-hmm. But we never actually hear what happened. I would love to have known what happened with that cake.
He probably
happened
like the carpet. Chili.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. The trick is to undercook the cake batter.
on their way out of the office, rushing to the car, Michael shouts out orders to three people when they leave for the hospital.
Oh,
what are those three orders he shouts out?
Aaron, bottle of water.
Yeah. No.
Oh,
Aaron is involved.
My go bag.
No, Aaron is to call an ambulance.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
You got the bottle of water, but who does he tell?
Kevin?
No, it's Meredith.
Meredith
to get a bottle of water, Aaron to call an ambulance, and who to man the phones?
Oh, Stanley.
Yes.
I noticed this. I was like, yeah.
Oh my gosh, I didn't catch that. I do love, Aaron pulls out his go bag and it's empty, right?
You are telling me now?
Yeah. Pam only knows that what album is on Jim's iPod?
8 Mile.
Yes, the 8 Mile soundtrack. I do not want her first music to be the 8 Mile soundtrack.
I'm curious what the actual baby, the birth song was that they were talking about.
We never know.
Yeah.
What are CeCe's specific dimensions? You got the 7 pounds when he announces.
7 pounds.
11 ounces?
2 ounces.
Yes, 2 ounces. 7 pounds, 2 ounces. How long?
Is it like 11 inches long?
18 inches. 18 is close.
Ooh, 11 is pretty short.
Super. Over the course of the show, I've learned what are boring trivia questions, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
But I had to ask because it's hard.
Because Edwin probably would have gotten it.
Yeah.
Well, when you rewatch these episodes a couple times to prep,
Right.
Yeah. The boring trivia questions are like, what's the file name or the kind of data questions? They're usually not that interesting. Jim and Pam share their room with what couple?
Oh, Dale and Kathy.
Dale and Kathy. Got that one. You already got this. Sean, the lactation consultant's name is?
Clark.
Very good. You also already got this one, Edwin. Dwight says, in regards to the contract revisions that Angela sent over, nothing left to do but what?
Dot the T's, the I's, and the umlauts.
The I's, the J's,
I's and
the umlauts.
I just said letters that don't have umlauts. Yeah, remember to dot your T's, everyone. Yep.
What hospital did Jim and Pam go to?
Oh, man.
What's
don't
the
know.
Name of the hospital?
Don't know.
I don't know.
Moses Taylor. hospital in Scranton. It's a real it's a real hospital in Scranton. Oh, and you only know that because of the lanyards that the nurse and Clark are wearing. Say Moses Taylor.
Very good.
Very small detail that they
really
nailed.
Really good. Yeah.
All right, last question.
Yep.
Fill in the blank. You let me in your bed, but now I sleep alone, trapped with the forgotten in my
detritus home.
Yes. Very good. That's, of course, what Ryan reads in the distraction.
Oh, my God.
Or contraction.
Yeah, yeah.
Contraction, distraction. Yeah. That's all I got.
Oh, that's very good. Really good trivia. Yeah. Thank you very much. And thank you all for listening. Please, if you ever have any questions or comments for us, give us a call. Our number is 503-694-9314. You can call us and leave us a message. You can also write to us on email, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com, or on Instagram or Facebook, Michael Scott Podcast Company, or on Twitter at Michael Scott Pod. And you can also check out our website, michaelscottpod.com, where you can find all those ways to get a hold of us. Special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who runs our social media and designs all our artwork. And this episode was recorded in the OG studio at the Ward Brother Residence in Portland, Oregon.
That's right.
Thanks so much for listening. Please remember to rate and review the show. It helps us, helps people find the show. And as always, thank you for everything that you guys have sent out. All the engagement is amazing.
Oh,
we love you all.
Thank you, guys.
The ratings and reviews, keep them coming. We really like seeing them. And it really helps people find our show. The more that we get, the more we see people actually
finding
about. It
always makes our week going through those.
Good stuff.
Thank you guys so much.
You guys are the best.
And join us next week.
Pippity poppy, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.
His palms are sweaty, knees weak, arms are heavy. There's vomit on his sweater already. Mom's spaghetti, he's nervous. But on the surface, he looks calm and ready to drop bombs. But he keeps on forgetting what he wrote down. The whole crowd goes so loud. He opens his mouth, but the words won't come out. He's choking how? Everybody's choking now. The clock's run out. Time's up.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.